Welcome, everyone. This is Nick Athanasiou, Vice President of Business Development and Strategy for Travel Dividends, a resource for all things related to affiliate marketing in the travel industry. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Mr. Mark Ellinger. Mark is the managing principal of Ellinger Consulting, a consulting firm that specializes in C-level strategy for companies in the aviation, travel, and consumer goods industry. Good morning, Mark, and welcome.
Morning, Nick. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, it's definitely our pleasure and our treat. Mark, before we begin, I gave a short background about yourself and your company, but perhaps you can give us a little bit more background regarding your professional history and your experience.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I actually started in the travel business way back when I was 17, handing out flyers on the campus of my university. And that started a really long and terrific career, not only in the travel industry, but then ultimately led to the airline business. I joined Swissair right out of college in an entry-level position in telephone sales and worked my way through the ranks of the company through various sales and marketing, general and executive management positions, and was also fortunate to have two stints at Swissair's head office in Zurich. Ultimately, after 21 years, I moved on to South African Airways as their EVP for the Americas and had an excellent and very fulfilling career with them, looking over their operations and their efforts on the North and South American markets. And then after that, launched my own consulting firm specializing in the airline and travel industries, dealing both with strategic issues, sales and marketing, and also startup companies.
Terrific, terrific. A very broad base of experience indeed, both from a domestic and international perspective. So I think today we'll have a wonderful conversation regarding, you know, how travel affiliates can work perhaps closer with airlines, particularly in the ever-changing travel distribution landscape. Mark, let's start with a really easy question. What's going on in the airline industry? Because it seems to me that a day doesn't go by where some major news story doesn't break. Generally not a good one or an encouraging one, but again, a major story about either a specific airline or about the state of the global industry as a whole. What's going on? What's your take?
Well, I'm glad you say that's an easy question, because I think even scholars can't figure out exactly what's going on in the airline business. Simply put, the airline industry is in survival mode. The combination of the weakened and the continuing weakening economy, combined with fuel prices that are starting to go back up again, has combined to create a disastrous trading environment for the airline business. And the clouds ahead don't look very encouraging. So the airlines are trying to battle back against this by reducing capacity, by shifting more flying to their regional partners. They're trying to do more international flying where the yields are supposedly better. And then, of course, everybody is looking to different revenue sources, so they're looking at fees and this unbundling focus on a la carte pricing. But it's a very, very difficult trading environment. One of the worst, I think, since the Wright brothers.
You make a very interesting point in terms of how bad the environment is today for the airlines and the sort of shocks to the system that it's been taking. You know, Mark, you've been part of this industry in a major way for the last several decades. What, in your view, thinking back to other disruptions that the airline industry has faced during this period of time, what's different about today's environment as opposed to, let's say, back at the start of airline deregulation in the late 1970s, and then, you know, more recently with the events of 9/11 and even the SARS virus. What's different about today in your mind from those?
That's a good question, Nick. I think the major difference is that in former difficult environments, over time, the business came back. I think the major difference right now is that it's very likely that the high yield passenger, you know, the full Y guy, the guy, you know, the walk up business class passenger to London paying $10,000, I don't think we're likely to see that passenger again in a very, very long time, if at all.
And
I also have to say that if you look at the model, the airline model, the legacy model, it's clearly broken, because a lot of it was based on these last-minute high-yield tickets. And without that revenue coming in, it's very, very hard to sustain the cost of a legacy carrier without those high yields. I mean, you could fill up an airplane, a 300-seat airplane, but if you don't have the right yield and mix, you're never going to be able to sustain the cost of running that operation. I think the other thing that's different this time, sorry, is that the airlines are smarter than they were in the previous difficult circumstances. If you go back to after deregulation, if you look at 9/11, if you look at going back to the times of terrorist attacks, they're smarter now in that they know one of the keys is the capacity and the overcapacity. When you have a very weak trading environment, everybody's chasing after the same fewer passengers that are left. So when I say they're smarter now, they're smarter in that they've been very proactive in pulling out excess capacity.
And it seems that despite the pullback of capacity and the wide-ranging cuts that a lot of U.S. carriers and indeed even international carriers have made, it seems that the traffic abandonment in terms of the same travelers you were mentioning a moment ago has caused still weakness in the sense that revenue per seat is down, correct, for the remaining capacity. So it seems that no matter what adjustments the airlines are making today, they're still having trouble turning a profit. Is that your sense?
That's correct. It goes back to what I was saying before, that those high-yield passengers are simply not there right now.
Mm.
So even if you're matching up the capacity to the overall demand, the yields are not coming. Because the trading environment, just in the general economy, is so weak. And also, corporates are going through a major restructuring themselves as far as looking at their cost of doing business. So they're either not traveling as much as they used to, they're not traveling at all, or if they are traveling, they're not sending six people to go to a conference or on a project. Maybe they'll send two people. And in addition, they've also cottoned on to the fact that a significant part of their operating budget is in travel. And they're looking for ways and means of reducing those expenditures. And one of the ways is by using refundable tickets, non-refundable tickets. And when you do that, you know, you have a company who maybe used to spend an average of $1,000 per person on a business trip for air, perhaps spending now maybe $250. So this all ends up in the bottom line of the airline.
And Mark, and given the scenario you just painted, is that one of the reasons why the airlines have been scrambling to generate ancillary revenues?
That's a very good point, Nick. That's one of the reasons. But the other reason, which is sort of a hidden reason, is because in this environment, in this weak economy, they're simply not able to raise airfares. So by going after other parts of the travel experience, by, let's say, unbundling these things, it gives them another revenue stream without seeming to raise airfares.
I see. And from your perspective, is this a good thing or a bad thing for the airline industry, the unbundling and then looking to recoup some of what used to be part of an airline fare separately by charging incrementally for these other services? Is this good or bad for the airline industry from you?
Well, Nick, some of it makes sense. I mean, some of it makes sense from the point of view of, okay, you know, let people pay as they go for things that maybe not everybody uses, so the guy who's going to use a specific service, he pays for that. But some of it really smacks of desperation.
What would be an example of that, Mark, the desperation?
Well, the idea of going too far and charging for every thing that's not bolted down on the airplane.
Right.
If you want to take it to the extreme, what Ryanair was contemplating doing is charging to use the lavatory.
Right. And if
maybe
anyone
that
would do it, it would be Ryanair. Yeah.
Farcical, but I think it's an example of having gone too far. And charging for baggage is one thing. Charging for water and a Coke and a little bag of peanuts on the plane, I think, and as an example, an airline did that. It was U.S. Airways. They tried it out, and the pushback from the public was so negative that they had to turn around on that decision.
So, Mark, let me ask you again a question based upon your years of experience within the airline and travel business. As you briefly described your background, you gave us a glimpse of the various roles and responsibilities you've had both within Swissair and South African, which have been, you know, rather extensive. And given those roles and responsibilities, what have you, looking back, thinking that was the most challenging for you personally? What might that be?
I'd have to say when I took over the reins at South African Airways as head of the Americas organization, it was certainly a turnaround situation. They were losing money in the region and on their routes. And what I quickly recognized was that they also had a rather small customer base, given the size of the market and given the opportunity. At the same time, they had a terrific product to sell, but it seemed like they were talking to only a handful of people, considering the potential in the market. So we had to find ways very quickly to turn the ship around and particularly to widen the net of customers and potential, particularly potential customers that we spoke to in our sales and our marketing efforts here.
I see. And so it sounds very much that you kind of recast the distribution strategy for South African and in the Americas. Is that correct?
Absolutely. In fact, we had a recast the sales strategy first, as well as the sales organization, from kind of trying to be all things to all people to much more of a channel and a market segment oriented sales force and sales strategy. And with that, of course, was the distribution strategy. And one of the biggest changes.
And I think it's fair to say that both you and I strongly agree that how well defined an airline's distribution strategy is, and just as importantly, how well they implement it and execute it, really determines in the end whether the airline survives or not. And we've seen over the years many airlines that have failed in those three areas, and they're no longer with us.
Absolutely. No, I said absolutely, and in fact, I mean, you have to first realize that you have to have a distribution strategy. I mean, some companies just throw a sales force out there without too much regard for what segments they need to go after and how do they distribute their product there, because especially today, you know, sales forces are very limited. So you've got to have other means that are out there working for you to get your product out there on the shelf.
Right, right. And as part of that distribution strategy, obviously many airlines, if not all airlines, look for distribution partners because they realize that they can't cover all the various customer segments that may exist and match up with their route system, with their product, with their services. So from, again, your experience, what are the key attributes that airlines in general look for when they explore the possibilities of engaging distribution partners?
Well, again, that's a very good question. And one of the keys there is finding partners who have the ability to reach out to market segments that the airline themselves are either unable or unwilling to penetrate. And these can be specialty markets, they could be ethnic markets, but it's simply beyond the reach of the airline. And keep in mind that, you know, as time has gone on, resources have become more and more constrained. So the carriers have to depend more and more on either new distribution strategies, additional partners, or just smarter ways of doing business to supplement their own sales force.
Right, right. So, for example, as we know, if the airlines are very dependent on business travel, and historically they work with partners that were called travel management companies, travel agencies that work with corporations, generally large and mid-sized corporations, and effectively have programs geared towards satisfying both the end-user company and their travelers as well as the travel management companies. And then you have a whole large, very large segment of what we call unmanaged business travelers and leisure travelers who don't really, you know, either work for a company that has travel policies with respect to business, or they're leisure travelers that don't really have much of an allegiance to any particular airline. And so this is where historically we've seen the travel affiliate industry come in and working with airlines. So to that point, when an airline is looking at a distribution partner, what might be some of the criteria? What are, you know, some of the characteristics, if you will, or attributes, Mark, that they look for in a distribution partner? And let me tag on a second question to that. Would those attributes or characteristics change depending on which segment of the travel industry the airline is looking to partner with? So, for example, is there a difference between what the airline is looking for with a travel affiliate marketer as opposed to, let's say, a tour operator or a travel consolidator?
Okay, well, let me answer the question first in regards to the key attributes. I mean, you want to look at the reputation of any partner that you're working with. What kind of track record do they have in the market? How are they regarded? You also want to look at the reliability of a travel partner, a marketing partner, and are they dependable? So these are very important attributes, and in particularly if you're talking about linking up systems. Obviously, you don't want to be involved in a partner that's going to damage your reputation or your standing in the marketplace, either because of their business practices or their reputation for dealing with the public.
Right.
And if you're talking about linking up things like websites or other public-facing media, there has to be some type of compatible branding and brand image. Airlines are very sensitive to their brand, to their logo, and they want to work with partners who are going to respect that.
And that's very true of many companies in the travel industry as well, not just the airlines. It's a very good point. And do they also look for references? Does let's just take generically, say a tour operator or a travel agent. Do they provide a reference, or is it again some sort of due diligence that the airline does in the background to determine that this is an ideal candidate versus someone else that maybe falls short?
It depends on the nature of the agreement. I can tell you from my past experience. When we're talking about selecting a major partner, we've gone through an RFP process, and as part of the RFP process, the partner or the potential partner provides references, because we ask that as part of of the RFP. In other cases, let's say that are less formal arrangements, we would certainly do due diligence on our own to look into the marketplace, talk to consumers, talk to partners, talk to people that we know in that channel or that segment, to see what their experience has been with this potential partner of ours.
So the old adage about the travel industry being very big but also very small, and that there is a lot of discussion that goes on amongst people within the industry. So
that's
your reputation
correct.
Is very, very important, isn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, Mark, as you're well aware, the affiliate marketing channel has been around in travel since pretty much the start of the information superhighway back in the early 1990s. And in fact, the travel industry has really powered, been one of the major engines of the e-commerce phenomenon. But in looking at the United States today and the major carriers that operate here, they're headquartered in the U.S., only a handful distribute via the travel affiliate channel. What's your thought on this? Why don't you see more active participation by all of the U.S. carriers in this channel?
It's a very good question, and I think it goes back to the issue of control. Airlines, particularly U.S.-based carriers, seem to be more fanatical about having total control over their own distribution, their own media, their own communication. And I think that they've been very slow to open up those lines to third parties. So I would say control is it. Trust is another area. But I'm seeing more and more lately, particularly in the low cost sector, or particularly in the carriers that are more, let's say, savvy marketers, who have been branching out into new channels of marketing and distribution, and including travel affiliates.
Right, right. And again, it seems that there's a bit of a disparity between how the U.S. airlines view the travel affiliate distribution channel as opposed to, let's say, the European carriers or Asian Pacific carriers. And having had the ability and the privilege of working both in Europe and the U.S., again, do you see any kind of differences or nuances between the approaches European carriers take versus those of U.S. carriers in this regard?
Well, because they're significantly smaller than their U.S. competitors, I think they've been more open to looking for third parties to support their own marketing and distribution efforts. In addition, their distribution channels just simply are not as vast or as deep as the U.S. carriers are. And I also think they've gotten past this stumbling block of total control over their marketing channels, so they're more willing to look into new style marketing techniques.
And so sort of by definition, Mark, what you're also saying is by virtue of being much smaller, not just in overall scale, but as an international carrier that wants to compete in the U.S. against the likes of United and American and Delta, three of the largest carriers in the world, they're much more willing to work with affiliate marketers. And in many cases, what we've seen is that they can actually compensate and structure programs that are far more attractive to an American travel affiliate than, let's say, a U.S. carrier who also is working with the affiliates here. Is that
absolutely.
That's what
I was trying to say. I'm sorry if that point didn't get clearly through, but that's absolutely the case. The smaller international carriers that are here in this market competing against the mega carriers, again, not only are they not as large and don't have the human resources, but they also have considerably smaller marketing budgets. So they have to be smarter, and they have to get more bang out of the buck to be able to be heard in such a large market with so much competition.
Right.
So therefore, they're much more, and I can tell you this from personal experience, with having the wonderful brands of both Swissair and SAA, but with rather meager marketing budgets, that we had to be smarter and we had to be more savvy to find additional partners and additional segments and channels to be able to compete with the legacy carriers in this market.
Got it. And so, Mark, as we think about some of the Travel Dividends listeners and readers who are, in fact, travel affiliates and their desire to build relationships or strengthen relationships they may have with either the Deltas here in the States, which Delta, Alaska Airlines, and a couple of others that offer affiliate programs, as well as the European and Asia Pac airlines, what would be some advice that you could pass along to our listeners regarding what they can do to better position themselves with these airlines and ensure that they have successful programs with them? Any thoughts?
Absolutely. And one important piece of advice would be, first and foremost, be professional in your communication with the carrier. You don't have to be a very large company. You don't have to be a Fortune 100 company. But if you're professional in your communication, in the way you present your business case to the airline, that's going to go a long way in establishing credibility with the airline. The look,
terrific suggestion. Suggestion or recommendation.
Okay, but the look and feel of your communication is very important to the people who are going to be ultimately making the decision on that. Show your track record as well, that you have a proven track record. Mention some satisfied customers that perhaps they can talk to verify the information you're sending. And talk about the reliability. Show the reliability of your product or your site or whatever it is that you're partnering or potentially partnering with the airline. In other words, what I'm saying, Nick, is it's important, even on a very simple, small level, to build a business case. And I don't mean a business case, with 150 pages and footnotes and all that. But even a very simple approach to an airline should have the good qualities of a business case to say, this is why we believe we're the right partner for you. This is the track record. These are some references. This is how we intend to work with you. And by showing the professionalism in the communication and whatever document, even electronic, will go a long way towards establishing credibility with the carrier.
Terrific. Those are wonderful insights, and I know that a lot of our readers will be able to leverage those and to again, reinforce their relationships or to build new ones with a lot of these airlines. Mark, if we move on to maybe a slightly different subject, though still along the lines of airline distribution, and as well as about how airlines will determine their distribution strategy and their partner selection criteria. I'd like you, though, to put your thinking cap on, and rather talking about today's competitive environment in the airline industry, I'm curious to hear what your views are relative to the future. How do you see the industry changing over the next, say, 3 to 5 years? What would be the major forces that could drive these changes, and what do you see as maybe the likely outcome or outcomes based, again, upon these forces?
Well, Nick, very difficult to predict the future, as we know from the gurus on Wall Street. But putting on my thinking cap, I think the two major issues are going to be the same ones that we talked about at the very beginning of our discussion this morning, that being the economy and fuel, because those are two of the major drivers for the airline industry. as you know, the economy is very directly linked to how the airline business proceeds. And from all the experts we listen to lately, they're not talking about a very quick recovery or turnaround, which will have dramatic impact on the airline business. And the other one is fuel. Fuel has become the most expensive, the largest share of an airline's expenses now. So if those two things continue to decline, or I should say in the price of fuel increase, but the economies continue to decline, the airlines will continue down the road of working in survival mode.
Right. One of the things, Mark, that we've noticed recently is, rather astonishingly, I should say, as well, is several airlines, Delta, for example, and up in Canada, WestJet, they've actually brought back commissions to the travel trade, particularly to travel agencies, which, as you know, you and I both know, they started to disappear some 15 years ago. In thinking about your views on the dynamics of the airline industry going forward in the next 3 to 5 years, do you think that there's a possibility that more airlines will rethink the commission issue, which they've tried to do away with? Do you think that maybe we'll see the commissions come back, and in fact these commissions being offered to travel affiliates as well as travel agents?
That's an excellent question, Nick. Let's be clear that we all know that when the commissions officially disappeared in the mid-90s, that they disappeared on the surface, but they still were there in the forms of overrides or back-end commissions or different types of remuneration schemes. But at least on the surface, it seemed like airlines weren't paying commissions anymore.
Right.
So that's one thing. I think that there'll always be the possibility out there for some carriers to pay for certain types of business, because all they've done now is shift this cost, and I think rather wisely, from paying everybody for every piece of business to being more selective, to pay for pieces of business, sectors of business that, again, they are looking for. They target certain routes. They target certain regions. They even target certain classes of service, perhaps only paying for business class traffic or paying for premium economy class traffic. And I think the need will continue to be out there for carriers to pay, but more targeted compensation for segments and even specific routes and types of traffic that they're looking for.
It's fascinating. So, again, to the extent, for example, that a travel affiliate can produce or generate traffic for an airline in specific regions, as you're suggesting, like maybe being a Latin American specialist or driving traffic, let's say, to certain other ethnic markets, well, that would be a very defensible position for a travel affiliate to pursue and could generate significant income for that affiliate.
Absolutely. And obviously then it would behoove a potential travel affiliate to look at carriers, read up about them, find out about their strategy, find out about new markets that they're opening up, because they're likely, if they're planning to open up a new market that they haven't been present in before, to look for as many distribution partners and assistants to open up that new market for them. And that's an opportunity for a travel affiliate to jump into.
Right. So a good example of that, Mark, might be, let's take Delta Airlines, because it is one of the larger airlines in the world, obviously in the U.S. as well. But as we know, a lot of the U.S. carriers continue to look at their international route structure to grow the airline and shrinking up more of their capacity domestically. So what you're suggesting is a travel affiliate to kind of look closely at what a Delta is doing, which new markets they're opening up, and then offer, design a campaign perhaps around that new market, and that could be a very rewarding opportunity for an affiliate by working.
I think Delta is a perfect example, Nick, and I'll give you a further example. Delta has been very active in opening up new international routes, not only in Europe, where they've traditionally had power, but more recently to Africa, and in fact, last week they opened up a new continent. They started flying to Sydney, Australia. So here's a completely new region of the world for them. So if you have affiliates out there who are active in that area and are knowledgeable about the Australian market, there's no better opportunity than to try to hook up with Delta.
Terrific. That's a great insight in providing our readers. Thank you. Thank you. A couple more questions, if I may, Mark. The next one is, again, thinking about that new world in 3 to 5 years and the issues, again, about the economy and fuel, et cetera. The travel affiliate channel, do you think that in large part that it's going to expand in terms of its relevance to airlines? Or do you think it's going to stay about the same, or do you think that it's going to shrink? What's your thought on that?
Oh, I definitely think this channel is going to expand. As you had correctly pointed out earlier in our discussion, here in the U.S., I mean, the U.S. carriers are just starting to awaken to this fascinating new way of marketing. So I think their opportunities are tremendous here in the U.S. with all the U.S. carriers who haven't yet gotten their feet wet in this area. So I definitely believe it will expand.
Right, right. And Mark, I think it's also fair to say that a lot of the other retailers today, like the online travel agencies, for example, that do sell airline product, are doing quite well in not so much selling the seat itself, but much like the airlines, profiting off of the ancillary revenue. Do you think that that also provides a good opportunity for an affiliate to look at, much the same way as the online agencies have been doing? Or do you think that there's not as a rich opportunity there for affiliates as it is for maybe some other retailers?
No, I think very much so that the online guys are a great opportunity for travel affiliates. In fact, I was just looking the other day and noticed if you look at the top 10 travel management companies in the U.S. based on total sales, four of the top 10 are now online guys.
Mm-hmm.
So these are forces to be reckoned with. And as you correctly point out, they are becoming more popular because of the value they offer and the fact that obviously you can buy a range of products, particularly airline products, as opposed to the airline's own site, where generally they're promoting their own services only.
Mm.
So here you have the best of both worlds. You have a range of airline products to choose from, and when they bundle them with other aspects of a trip, such as hotel, car rental, in many cases there are savings to be had there, and I think people are becoming more aware of this. So therefore, that's, I think, a tremendous opportunity for an affiliate marketer.
Great observation. Oh, wonderful. Okay. Let's see. Again, one last question about the future. In thinking about the future, is there any other bit of advice that you could offer to our travel affiliate marketers that would help them to assure that they'll be an important and valued element of the airline distribution mix going forward? It might be a little bit different than what they need to do today. Tomorrow, do you see and envision anything different for them, and what is it that they might be able to do?
Well, I still think the key is that they need to develop products and services that complement the airline product. So they need to study the market very well. They need to study the carriers very well to see what's missing. What is the airline not offering in their online offer that you could complement as an affiliate marketer? And as I said earlier, I mean, be aware of the market segments that airlines are just entering. As I mentioned, Delta and Australia. but also be aware of other channels that airlines may want to be in, but they don't have the resources. I mean, keep in mind, as we go along, airlines will become more and more resource constrained. So their sales force, their diminished sales force, is going to be running after those, mostly those high yield areas and major, maybe the major touristic areas that you know, that they traditionally have gone through. That will leave the other markets wide open. So if you're a potential partner of an airline, look at those areas and say, okay, where are they not being, where are they not focusing their efforts right now? And that could be a potential winner to hook up with an airline.
Terrific. Great. Great. Well, Mark, is there one last question, I guess. Is there anything else that I should have asked you that I've neglected to do so?
No, I think your questions have been quite comprehensive, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you this morning.
Well, the pleasure is all mine and Travel Dividends, and again, we thank you for taking time from your busy schedule. This does conclude our discussion with Mark Ellinger, Managing Principal of Ellinger Consulting. And again, we wish all of our readers and listeners a pleasant day. Thank you very much.